Hello and welcome to Trending Now with Josh Arnold and Rick Moore. Been quite a while. I am Rick Moore. Josh Arnold is here, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and this is a program we're going to try to have on most Fridays during the fall and the upcoming school year. Welcome back.
Welcome back. First show, season two.
Yeah. Season two. Get this. I love the way you do that. Well, anyway, so what do you got lined up for today?
Karen Sawyer Cornard is the director of Department of Community Development and Planning for the City of Peabody. She's got a number of things to talk with us about. And then Jonathan Pope, chairman of the Gloucester School Committee, is going to talk about the opening of West Parish School and in some broader discussion about construction of schools and renovation of schools and, you know, what the future might hold.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. And we need to take a break. We'll come back with Josh's first guest in just a second or two. So stay with us. This is Trending Now. And watch our website for further program today. Lots coming up.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
Gloria Food Store is still Beverly's number one deli, and no matter what New England weather is thrown at us, Gloria is open. With fresh bread delivered from Sunray Bakery every morning, Gloria can provide party platters, calzones, hot trays, cold trays, salad trays, and finger sandwiches for whatever you have planned. Call in your order at 978-922-3613, stop in at 268 Rantoul Street, or visit GloriaFoodStore.com.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright Double Hung Insert Window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan, and today I'd like to speak to you about the North Shore Student Athlete Program. Sponsored by Moynihan Lumber in conjunction with the Salem News, the Daily Item, the Newburyport Daily News, and the Gloucester Times. The program, now in its 24th year, celebrates high school students who excel not just on the playing field, but in the classroom as well. Male and female winners are chosen each month. All student athletes must be nominated by their coaches. Nominations for the program are made via email to nsstudentathlete@gmail.com. Youngsters who are nominated must have a B average or better. Monthly winners are then eligible to be selected as Student Athletes of the Year. Yearly winners and their families are recognized at a luncheon at the Salem Country Club held in early June. Please remember, all youngsters playing a varsity sport at any high school on the North Shore, public, private, or parochial, are eligible.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest for the new season is Karen Sawyer Cornard. Karen, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much for having me.
Well, we started the show out. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you're the Community Development Director and Head of Planning for the City of Peabody, but your bio, and then we'll talk some things about Peabody.
Sure. So as Director of the Community Development Department here, there are 15 or 16 of us. We oversee the planning, the conservation, the building department, the housing aspect. We have a role with the George Peabody House. It's a pretty comprehensive department. It tends to be the place in City Hall where if you don't know where to start, you come to community development. And before that, I've had experience in other municipalities. I worked for the City of Methuen. I've worked in state government, and I'm a political science junkie, I guess. Call me.
Great. You grew up where?
I grew up in Wayland, Massachusetts.
Sure.
And My dad was a lobbyist, so all I wanted to do was something in government. So here I am, a bunch of years later. I'm lucky. In my job, I also get to wear a lot of hats, so I play. I like to participate and play a role with the Peabody Area Chamber of Commerce. We just started a brand-new Peabody Main Streets program we're excited about. I'm on the board of the Peabody Cultural Collaborative. I happen to be, this year, the president of the Peabody Rotary Club. And in my spare time, I participate as a director in a bank, and I have three teenagers.
Wow. That keeps you busy. So lots of improvements to Peabody Square, public investment and so forth. Tell us about what's happened there.
Well, we have been lucky to be the beneficiary of two big MassWorks grants. Those are state grants for roadway improvements and improvements that are tied directly to economic development. So in the last 4 or 5 years, we've received $4 million in state grant money, and the city has chipped in $2 million to augment that. So all told, the city has spent $6 million in improvements to both Main Street, which happened first, so essentially from the Salem line up to and including our Peabody Chamber of Commerce, and most recently, we're about to wrap up literally next week, the improvements to Peabody Square. So along this stretch of roadway, which is about a mile, you will have traffic lights that are synchronized and talk to each other. You'll have pedestrian improvements. You'll have vehicular improvements. And essentially, we want to make the area more user-friendly, more walkable, have a safer, more intimate feel. It used to have two lanes in each direction, and we've really tried to slow traffic down in a calming way, not in a you-can't-get-where-you're-going way. We have the benefit of 27,000 cars per day coming through Main Street and Peabody. So we would like to take advantage of that, and we would also like to show Peabody off. So we're excited to have this whole new traffic configuration come online formally once we pave next week. So the idea would be that the city made this investment in a direct attempt to attract private developers, and the first set of MassWorks grant activities did just that. We've had several buildings change hands. We've seen some improvements, and we hope to see some more. And I was told 7 years ago when I was offered the job, I was told the thing that I could do to help Peabody was to bring back Brothers Deli. And we're excited to announce that Brothers Deli is coming back. They'll be opening up this fall in their old space right on Main Street.
Great.
So it's a good example of how one institution can be that economic driver. So we're looking for some other economic drivers, some anchor tenants. It would be great to have an institution of higher learning. It would be great to have something that generates foot traffic both day and evening, to augment some of the nice things we already have. We have a great, we have some great restaurants, and we'd like to add to that, because we've been told and we know from watching it that good restaurants all near each other help each other. You know, it's like a rising tide lifts all boats.
Sure. Okay, centennial. You're undergoing your centennial celebration this year, and
Yep, we became a city this year. We've been incorporated since, I believe, 1869, but in 1916 we became a city.
Okay, so tell us what's planned for the centennial celebration of the city of Peabody.
Sure. We've had a couple of fun events at Brooksby Farm. We have a real big event. The signature event to mark the centennial is our centennial parade, which will take place on Sunday, October 2nd. The parade steps off at Eastman Gelatin, now known as Russolo, right on Washington Street at 11 a.m. The route follows Washington Street all the way up to Main Street. Then it goes all the way to a viewing stand at Forest Street, if you can picture that, and then continues on to the North Shore Mall. So we would love to encourage people to attend. We have made available ample parking up in Centennial Park for viewers, and from there we'll have a shuttle. So we're trying to make it as easy as possible for folks to get downtown. And we're excited to host an after-parade party, because what do you do with all the fun people who come to Peabody? You have a party for them after we have a parade. So we are setting up a post-parade party at Emerson Park from noon to 4. We'll have food trucks. We'll have Ipswich Ale with a beer truck. We'll have music. We'll have activities. So it's really a family-friendly recognition of the centennial. We're very excited.
Great, great. And I'll be there, too.
Wonderful. I'm told it's going to be like nothing anyone has ever seen. I'm hearing something like 50 floats and 20 bands, and it's really
good. Wow, that's great. Yeah, 20 bands is a big parade. But
there is.
So you have a farmer's market in Peabody. Is that new, or how's that going? And
it's actually not new. We're in our 15th year. Oh. We are really proud of the farmer's market. We have it right on the front steps of City Hall. We host it every Tuesday from 1 p.m. until 6 p.m. We have a dedicated group of regulars, and we always attract folks who are driving by and happen to check us out on a Tuesday. So that will run through Tuesday, October 11th. We typically run through the Tuesday after Columbus Day. And it's a great tradition, and we love hosting it right outside of City Hall.
And what is the Nightmare on Main Street?
I think it used to be called the Nightmare, and now I guess we're trying to tone that down and not scare people, and we're now referring to it as the Halloween on Main Street event.
Okay.
It's Thursday, October 27th. It will involve store vendors opening up, offering candy, making it fun for kids to go from storefront to storefront, and we're very excited about that. I think we changed the name in recognition of trying to make it more family-friendly. But we're happy to have the businesses involved in a city activity. And on the heels of that, we have the Shop Small event, which is a national marketed day, which takes place the Saturday after Black Friday. So this year will be Saturday, November 26th. And that will take place in our downtown as well. We will host a holiday stroll and another way to involve the businesses and welcome people downtown. So this, at least this year, they can see the great developments that have taken place with our improvements to Peabody Square. We now have a monument that is lit in a gorgeous fashion. We have a traffic pattern that is safer, and we have wonderful landscape and benches. It's really a much more inviting place. If you haven't been to Peabody Square in a while, you won't even recognize it.
Okay. You have a public safety memorial underway. Tell us about that.
We do. We are quite proud of the police and fire departments of the city of Peabody, and something that came about after an unfortunate event, because we're coming up on the 5th anniversary of the passing of firefighter Jim Rice and that tragic fire. Both organizations got together and said, we need a memorial to recognize fallen officers and all the work that the departments do. So the city worked with both departments to locate a site. It's right across from Emerson Park, so for all of you who come to the post parade party, you'll see the construction. It will be a gorgeous bronze statue with lights and an eternal flame feature, and it will have benches, and it will be a nice place to reflect on the work of the two departments and really to get a sense of how hard they work on behalf of everybody. So we're excited to see that taking place. The both departments spent years fundraising and planning. The sculptor involved has done many famous pieces, and he's almost finished with the work, so the sculpture will be delivered and the granite and the paving will be set around it this October. We expect to have a ribbon cutting in November. And I believe it's not too late if you want to check out peabodymemorial.org. There is a way to contribute. Folks can buy a brick paver and write in dedication or in honor of a loved one. I know the Peabody Rotary Club bought a paver because we'd like to be part of this area. It will be a shining piece of work, of art, for years to come. It's a lovely spot. It's right in the neighborhood of Emerson Park.
Great. What are some of the challenges that you face as a community development director today, and how has your job and those challenges changed maybe since you came into your position and what you're dealing with now?
Great question. I think being able to see the forest or the trees would be my quick answer. A lot of what we do is very immediate, and you see the results quickly, and you can gauge whether what you're doing is working or not. So I love that about city government. So a lot of what we do is in the moment and almost reactive. But the very nature of the planning aspect of what we do speaks to long range, being able to look out 5-10 years and plot a course and follow that course. So I think the challenge is always to keep people on course and maneuver around the politics, small p, of what's going on and keep the larger goals in mind.
And planning in the real world versus government is always different. I mean, if in industry we talk about you start with the day the product's going to ship and you work backwards to what your milestones are. In government, there's always a tendency to, we'll start with today and we'll go forward.
Right.
the planning concepts are just substantially different. And so you get people from business that come and say, I don't understand how this works.
Right. And sometimes there's a rub, and sometimes there's a frustration, and how can you operate this way? And I think those of us who've been in this line of work for 15, 20 years, and I'm lucky that I work with so many talented people who've been doing this, don't get bogged down by the frustration of we're not sure where the end line, the end is, but we'll get there. A lot of work and collaboration and people coming in and out of a project sometimes can add to that project. So occasionally we will have the benefit of working from a deadline or working from a milestone and having to work backward. But I think the talents lie in the people who are patient and know who to go to. You know, the beautiful thing about Peabody compared to many other places that I've worked is there are so many people who step up and volunteer to help out and have great pride in this city. I really have not seen that anywhere else. And I've worked in many communities in the state, and it's a very unique attribute of Peabody folks that they're really proud to see things through here. So I'll get involved in something, and I won't know exactly how to do it, but I know five people who I can reach out to, and they'll help. And I think they're starting to think the same of me, and I'm proud to have that.
You're on the golden Rolodex.
And vice versa. It's great. If you don't know, that's okay. You just need to know who to reach out to. And there's so many resources here for that.
Well, it's funny because you're president of the Rotary Club for Peabody this year, and that's that's a distinction that we've talked about at district for Rotary. And there's 2,000 people out there north of Boston who you can pick up the phone at any given time, and they're going to help you or tell you who to talk to.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's a wonderful network.
Yeah.
And it's genuine, and folks really just want to be helpful and see Peabody do well. And that's the most encouraging thing to me. We may all not know what we're trying to achieve sometimes, but we all know it's for the betterment of Peabody. And one of the benefits of working for both Mayor Mike Bonfanti and for Mayor Ted Betancourt is they've been so supportive of what this department has offered up. I think we have a nice relationship of give and take. We'll offer things up. We'll take direction. We're very fortunate here to have a lot of resources at our disposal. And the attitude in Peabody is great. I got to meet some people. Let me speak about the pop-up dinner party that we held the Friday of Labor Day weekend. We hosted 150 people in a park in downtown Peabody, and it was phenomenal. And the best thing about it was that I didn't know half the people.
Yeah.
And they were young folks, older folks. They just were excited that something was happening downtown.
Yeah.
And it felt safe, and it felt inviting, and it involved a bunch of different restaurants, many of which they'd never visited, but now they're talking about visiting. So it was that real, genuine feeling of place that was wonderful, and we're trying to do more things like that.
How is technology impacting what a community development or a city or municipality does in the way of trying to showcase to the public what happens within their domain?
Yeah, we're really trying to take advantage of social media opportunities, and I am not the hippest kid on the block, and I'm not the most tech savvy, but I work with some folks who really are, and we were just talking about this morning at a meeting about checking in on Facebook and tagging somebody and making someone aware of where you are so as to draw attention to that place and to let your friends know that you're at this place. And that speaks to the new generation of how to market. It may be less print advertisement. It's more word of mouth. It's more instantaneous, if you will. A lot of people are making their plans more in the moment.
I'm interested in the technological advancements and how they're being used. My daughter and her boyfriend went out to eat somewhere. I think they went in Maine, but it doesn't matter. But they showed up at a restaurant, and they gave them their cell phone number, and they were free to shop while they were waiting for a seat to eat.
Right.
And then, they get a text saying, go, your seating's available. And then after they left the restaurant, they get a text saying, we hope you enjoyed and continue to shop in the town and so forth. Well, that was neat. I'm like, wow, it's interesting that, businesses are doing that. I'm wondering, where does that come into government where there's a give and take, communication on the different forms of customer service so that we can, you know, on the, you go to the website maybe and it showcases, this is all the things that we do and these are the people you have to talk to. But then when, you know, when you get it, you know, there's this automatic or personal touch that, you know, I hope we did what you were looking for.
Right. You're touching on an interesting point. In my role in government, I sit on the Peabody Main Streets board of directors, and one of the committees for this group met this morning, and it's the promotions committee. So we were talking about this very thing. So even though I don't have a particular product or I don't have money to put at this effort, there are ways to do this with other members of the group. And a good example was we were talking about a restaurant in, I believe it's Arlington, Mass., where you check in on Facebook, they know that you've checked in, they come over to your table, they thank you for checking in, and they give you an incentive, like an appetizer. And we'd love to make more of that happen in Peabody. So sometimes you don't need access or money, you just need to steal good ideas.
Yeah.
That's something we've learned in our coming up to speed on the National Main Streets model that we're looking to apply to Peabody Main Streets. We think Beverly's done a great job with their Main Streets program, and Salem has as well, and so we're learning from them and taking the good ideas.
Can you spare a few minutes to tell us a little bit about that, the National Main Streets program, and what that entails or involves?
Sure. We recently showed interest in creating a Main Streets for Peabody. We've attended two annual National Main Streets conferences to learn more about how other folks have done this, so we're not reinventing the wheel, and we've met a number of great people along the way who've been willing to help us. So just this past month, we were incorporated as a 501c3. So Peabody Main Streets now exists not only in our minds and in our planning ability, but in our ability to raise funds. So it's made up of private sector business people, government people, chamber, all the boards and service groups that have something to do in Peabody. So now we're looking to promote what is going on in the downtown. So it's we're learning, and there's a steep learning curve, but it's really fun because you can try all sorts of activities. We have done the pop-up pub in the street last year. We took over 3 parking spaces last October right across from the library, and the intent was twofold: activate a space, make people come downtown, and stop people on their way to Salem in October. And we did just that. So we built such a big following for this pop-up pub that we're doing it again this year, and I'd love to promote it. It's Friday, October 21st, 6 o'clock in the street. You'll see us. We don't hold up traffic. It's a really fun way to get people to come out and see that the downtown is lively. So, you know, a lot of different people organized around one common goal, which is activate the downtown and recognize the nice things that are there and add to that.
Great. What are the? We have a few more minutes left, and what are some of the things that are on the horizon that Peabody or the Community Development Department is looking at, or just starting to turn over some rocks and say, well, maybe we could do that? Or,
well, we built the park at East End Veterans Memorial Park on Walnut Street. We're really proud of that park. That was on a former brownfield site. We have developed a wonderful set of trails in the South Peabody area known as the Bonfanti Nature Trail and the South the Spring Pond Trail System, which is great. We were involved in the bike path, which was developed, 8 years ago now, and we're coming up on the work to restore Crystal Lake, which will take place this fall and winter. And so some of the things we do aren't as sexy as some of the things you can see on Main Street, but they lead to community resource recognition and protection. In my time, we've rewritten the zoning ordinance, which wasn't the least bit fun. Wrote the open space and recreation plan, which really calls on and recognizes what the city wants, which is to maintain the parks it has and raise the level of access for folks to enjoy the many resources we have. So we're all over the place. We love it.
In the context of your parks and recreation and so forth, do you anticipate in the future that somebody logs onto your website, for example, and says, I want to go to, I don't know where I want to go, but where can I go in Peabody? And you have a drop-down menu that shows, or graphics, there's pictures of all the really nice places. Would there be something that says, this is where you can, like a legend that has, they have parking that's handicap accessible,
We have some of that information, and we can always improve. And our website is peabody-ma.gov. And from there, you can see the various departments. And I know Parks and Rec has some great links from their page. So that's where we have a good website, and we're always building and adding new information to it. But we're also benefiting from the other community links for information like that. And Peabody Main Streets is going to ramp up and get a website that will be called livepeabody.com, and we will promote events all over Peabody as well. You know, not just the economic development drivers, but the outdoor and publicly accessible places as well.
That's great. Now,
really, it's really what makes Peabody Peabody. We have, no, I'm not sure people all know, we have a farm which thrives, and we have a golf course, and we have so many different areas for recreation. So
Peabody years ago was largely farming, was it not?
It was largely farming. Interestingly, the Centennial Park was piggery and farmland that was purchased and then parceled off to be industrial parcels.
The Nugent Farm condominiums in Gloucester that are just, you know, have the visual of Good Harbor Beach. That was, you know, Nugent's was a piggery. So it's interesting. Danvers and Peabody were big farmlands, and they were one entity and broke off somewhere.
Right. And Peabody's original name was Brooksby because of all the waterways that ran through it. So that would explain why we named our farm Brooksby Farm.
There you go. All right, great. Well, wonderful having you on the show. We've got probably 2 minutes left. Can you tell us a little about what you're doing with your Rotary Club?
Oh, I love Rotary.
See, I used to do a Rotary Radio Hour, and I interviewed people up and down. I've had one or more of your past presidents on the show, so I'm always curious to know what people are doing.
Well, we're trying to understand who our member is these days. We're almost 50-50 male-female, and we're a lot younger than I think people expect the Rotary Club to be in terms of median age. We're trying to understand what our members would like, and so this year we've switched to having the first meeting of every month be a social evening meeting, and we're going to host it, or we're going to hold it at a different restaurant or facility every month just to spread the love and visit new places and get people to see new places. So that's been fun. I think people have benefited from that because some of our members have early morning jobs and can't get to Rotary. But Rotary really is service above self and helping others in the community and helping globally. Rotary International is a big group. I think it's over 1.5 million people and 33,000 clubs, of which Peabody is just one. But we're a group of 45 or so folks who meet every Thursday morning at Red's Diner. And essentially, we do good in the community. Our most recent thing that you could see and touch and feel would be that we built and installed handicap accessible swings at a park in Peabody.
That's great.
So we're proud of that, and more to come on that.
Super. Do you how much you get a community development block grant, and some of that money is for handicap accessibility? Does any of that money go to upgrading the parks or things like that to make those handicap accessible? Are you able to collaborate with Rotary or other clubs to
haven't
build?
Yet, but we could. That's a good thought. We just used some community development block grant money to take down a blighted building in Peabody Square. It just came down this week. So that money can be used for a whole host of things.
You want to talk to Steve Cady in the Gloucester Rotary Club, who is the commander in chief of the Stage Fort Park project, and they put over $250,000 into renovating that, and they used some community development block grant money as part of that. So
that's fantastic.
Good. Well, thank you for being a guest on our show, and wish you the very best in your centennial celebration. And I will be there as the polar bear for whatever that's supposed to be. And
we're excited to have you.
This will be posted so you can you and your folks, your crew, can listen to it on demand later today.
Oh gosh! Thanks, Josh. Take care.
Thanks, Karen. Bye now.
Bye.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at Historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Jonathan Pope. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Josh. Thank you.
Tell us, start out with your bio. I know we grew up in East Gloucester, so we know each other, but tell us, for the benefit of the listening audience, a little bit about yourself. I know you're the chairman of the Gloucester School Committee, but just tell us about you.
Okay. Well, I grew up in East Gloucester, as you said. I went to East Gloucester Elementary School. Back then, because only went to fifth grade, I went to sixth grade at Eastern Avenue, then I went to Central Grammar and on to the high school. I attended New York University and also Boston Architectural Center. I am married. I taught shop in industrial arts in a private 766 school back in the late 70s and early 80s. But since then, I've run Pope Cabinets for 31 years, and we do cabinet making and millwork locally, pretty much.
Good.
And I have two sons. Both went through Gloucester school systems. Gregory and James. James went on to Northeastern and majored in IT, and he's now the director of IT for the city of Gloucester. And my wife is Susan. We've been married for 34 years, and she's a teacher. She's the SPED case manager at Veterans Memorial School. And my youngest son, Gregory, who attended New England Culinary Institute and cooks at Finn's in Salem.
Oh, great.
And as far as the school connection goes, I got involved in East Gloucester School when my kids were going there. I ended up being the president of the PTO for a couple of years, and then in 1998, I ran for school committee, and I served 10 years, the last four as chairman. In 2008, when Gregory graduated, I got off, and I had some health issues, and in 2011, I decided to run again, and I was elected, and I've been chairman ever since.
Great. Well, we just had an opening for the West Parish Elementary School, and that's just an absolutely beautiful new facility that's come online. Tell us about how that project went and how folks are enjoying it and how the opening was.
Well, it's been a long process. Way back in 2002 when we did the Mount Vernon report, though, West Parish was identified as the building that most needed to be repaired or replaced. In 2008, they submitted a statement of interest to the Massachusetts School Building Authority. But then in 2010, in the process, we had the water crisis, you'll remember, and city resources were spread very thin, so they asked for an extension, which they received, and then in 2012, they reactivated that statement of interest, and we went into eligibility with Massachusetts School Building Authority, and we started the process, in 2016, we opened the new school, and it is the first new school building built in Gloucester since I guess since O'Malley opened up in, 72 or 3?
Yeah, you're right. I was thinking about, I almost said Plum Cove, but you're right. It's O'Malley.
Yeah, because, yeah.
Plum Cove was 69 when Cal Eels was here, yeah.
Yeah, so, so it's been quite a while since a new school has been built, and of course it's a lot of things have changed about how you build schools and what they look like, and the technology that's involved. West Parish, the new West Parish, is a LEED Gold certified building, which means that it's extremely environmentally in tune and energy efficient. When you drive up to it, you'll see a lot of not your usual lawn, but you'll see a lot of plantings, and that's for to absorb the runoff from the parking lot, and you know, including the materials that were used in the building, and the heating system and cooling system. It doesn't. If you've been in there on a hot day, you realize it's quite comfortable. But it has, but it doesn't have air conditioning. It has what they call an air displacement system with dryers. So it's constantly changing the air in the whole building and adjusting the temperature up. It can only heat it. It doesn't cool it. But it does dry it, and dry air seems a lot cooler to people.
Well, just the fact that you have an air exchange program is new. Years ago, when they had the energy crisis back in the early 70s, the powers that be in the administration, going back to when George Lane was superintendent, they closed all those, you know, vents or welded them shut, so there wasn't that interchange of drawing in fresh air and then heating it. So the only way you got fresh air is if you opened the window.
Right, and yeah. And O'Malley, that's difficult.
Yeah. With internal classrooms, right? Construction has changed so much over the years. I know that. For example, when Gloucester High School was built, if you had to have two egresses from a classroom, the standard in 1939 was when you exited a classroom, you had to be able to go to the left or go to the right. You know, by the time you built the sister schools, Veterans and Beeman, you had to have an exit, you know, on either end of the building, or you know, two entrances or an entrance from each classroom. But as each generation or every 10 years or so, the building standards change.
Right.
And for example, I know when we did the addition at East Gloucester Elementary School, the state says, you're going to have a kindergarten classroom. If we're going to give you money, it's going to be this big as a minimum.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, right now the standard is 900 square feet for a regular classroom and 1,100 square feet for a kindergarten classroom, and a kindergarten classroom has to have a bathroom.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, when you go back to East Gloucester and Vets, and not Vets, but East Gloucester and the old West Parish, both of those buildings were built with a kindergarten classroom.
Yeah.
Even though they didn't offer kindergarten. And so that one room that was on the end of each building was quite quite large and actually met today's standards.
Yeah.
Just there was only one of them in each of the buildings. But East Gloucester has two kindergartens, and you know, West Parish had three. But it's interesting that back then they had the foresight. They sort of were looking forward at that point to that there would be kindergarten, and that.
I'm told that when they built Gloucester High School in 1939, they anticipated that we would be at war in a period of time, and above all of the windows, there was a little latch, and in case they wanted to blacken all of the windows or convert it to a manufacturing capability.
Yeah.
Who knows?
It's possible. It
could be an urban legend, but it could be real, too.
1939, was a concern.
Yeah. So, you know, I understand all of the buildings, you know, what they were designed for doesn't meet the standards the state says for today, and that poses some challenges for Gloucester schools or any school system because, you know, you acquired land years ago, but the footprint of that land or may not be enough land to do a renovation or an addition or whatever.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. When we started the West Parr, and this is the good thing about dealing with the new MSBA, just for historical purposes, to keep in mind that MSBA was run by the Department of Education, and it was they had a lot of problems, and a lot of them with overstating financial commitments and such. And they in 2002 they shut it down. And
let me just say, Chapter 648, the Acts of 1948, was done to accommodate post World War II growth and build schools across the Commonwealth.
Right.
What happened in the – but it was subject to a periodic reauthorization.
Right.
And what happened in around the 80s or 90s was they were coming up for renewal, and under the auspice of the Department of Ed, they were afraid they weren't going to get renewed. So they had the state bureaucracy telling all the superintendents, hey, you know, there's all this money up there, and if you don't apply, you know – then they walked in with these big binders and gave them the legislatures. Well, if you cut our program, this is what you're going to do to your cities and towns. So there was that politics of it. So it was nice. It's nice to see that we've evolved from that kind of a political football, and there's actually a logic to how you do things.
Right. Now the Massachusetts School Building Authority is under the auspices of the department, the Treasurer's Department.
Yeah.
And it also is not subject to funding. It it receives 1% of the gross of the sales tax. So it has institutionalized funding. So they, depending on the economy, it fluctuates, but it's not dependent on what's hot that year in the legislature when they do the budget.
And that's a breath of fresh air for the whole process.
Right. So they are much... And they're far more diligent as far as oversight, so they have all these requirements. But just to give you an idea about the building, we got a little off there, but the building size sort of thing. West Parish was about a 45,000 square foot building with all the additions.
Mm-hmm.
And when we rebuilt it, to accommodate the same number of students that were currently in that building, we had to build a building that was 65,000 square feet.
Yeah.
If you use that math or as a rule of thumb, you know, it's almost half again bigger than what you have.
Sure.
So.
And that's what presents the problem that you have now, because, you know, West Parish and East Gloucester were sister schools built in 48 and 49. Whatever you did in West Parish, you got to come up with some other solution for East Gloucester.
Well, exactly. And East Gloucester is a farm. I mean, at least there was some land at West Parish. West Parish site was about 10 and a half acres. And it with little or no restrictions on it. We thought we were going to be able to build in the further back where the field is now and then move the field up front, but it turned out that wasn't the soils there weren't really compatible. There was a lot of clay and such. But at East Gloucester, the site is only 5.5 acres, and half of it is a playground
that you can't use.
Needed as a playground, which is very...
Parsons Playground, for playground purposes only.
Right. So you have to... to change that requires a huge amount of legwork and eventually a vote from the legislature.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah. So, and that being said, It's still small.
Well, I mean, the land is difficult to. I mean, even if you reconfigure it, the neighboring property, is within 10 feet of the corner of the building.
Yeah.
And you slope, you go over to the rock area where the the restaurant that's changed names 30 times.
Yeah.
Main Street, on East Main Street, but that's all ledge, and then you can't do too much because you could change the water table, and everybody on Chapel Street ends up getting water in their basement.
Yeah, there is wetlands that are in the playground, and apparently run. There's streams that have been culverted off over the years, and if you start messing with those, that water's still going to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Hopefully, not into people's basements, but it's always something to be considered. I know there's been some situations where when things got built that the water table did change.
So the school committee's contemplating, as any school board would, some alternatives, and you've come up with a possibility, and you've had some discussion with that, airing that to the public. How's that going?
Well, the other thing that you have to consider, and it was a real problem with West Parish, is that you have to house those students somewhere. So East Gloucester and Vets sites are both similar in size and similar in the fact that half of them are playgrounds, and that they have, access issues and this and that. So we've spent the last, 9 months working on this, and one of the things we did somewhere along the line was we just got a map of all the city-owned property in the entire city. And the city owns a lot of property, but of course much of it is watershed or parks or beaches and that sort of thing. But they do own a large piece of land in East Gloucester. It's made up of 5 or 6 different parcels that have all been taken essentially for taxes over the course of many, many years, going back into the 30s, I think.
Wow.
But it's a swath of land. It runs from Mount Pleasant Avenue all the way back to High Hopples Road, sort of parallel with the old Marble Road, although the old Marble Road does go through part of that property.
Yeah.
And initially we had our architects, Doran Whittier, look at it over. They didn't have a map of the property, so they just went to the Swinson's Field part, which is where the recreational area is off of Mount Pleasant Avenue, and they came back and said, "No, that won't work. That's there's wetlands. There's too much ledge. It's not big enough." And somewhere along the line, I said, "Well, did you look at the whole of it?" And they said, "Well, I thought we did, but I showed them a map," and they said,
"You and I know East Gloucester, but those people don't."
Yeah. So we went around from the other end, from the High Popples end, and they walked in, and they said, "Well, this is a different story.
We didn't go to this part.
We know it's the Pines."
Yeah.
So they seemed to think that had potential. Now, they're architects, not engineers.
Yeah.
So if there's a possibility now that we could build there, that would solve a number of problems. One of them, the biggest one, being the swing space. The second one being the amount of space that is required to build a school. There's 43 acres in that parcel.
So the access point would be coming in from Atlantic Road.
Well, from High Popples.
High Popples Road, excuse me. Yeah.
The old Marble Road, which on paper, it's just a path beyond, just past the Goose Pond now.
Isn't there an outlet that comes out still on Atlantic Road? I haven't, I remember I was a kid, but
it got developed.
Yeah, okay.
It used to go all the way through to Atlantic Road,
But I think what happened is it got some houses got built along there, and they actually named it something different.
Okay, I think it's
still there, but it's just a it ends on High Popples.
Okay,
but there is that access point going into that land right there.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, there's some houses very close to both sides of that access point, but it certainly isn't any narrower than Davis Street Extension.
No. Well, in both East Gloucester and Veterans, you have you're landlocked. You have very limited ability to spread out or up.
Yeah.
The only other places that you have of what you own are Beeman and Plum Cove. You have some vast to land, and of course we don't know what's going to happen to the Fuller property, but that's neither here nor there. So tell us where we are with the you had a hearing recently to kind of air it out, and how did that go?
Well, you know, people are always have concerns, and some of them are just to some extent fear of change, and some of them are very legitimate. What the proposal we put forward was that we would combine East Gloucester and Vets and build a building on the Pines that would house both of those students. So there is concerns about big schools,
mm-hmm.
and that's a legitimate concern, and we need to consider it and address it. When we closed Fuller, there was a lot of, if the choice was between closing Fuller or closing two small schools, the consensus was that we should keep small schools, the small schools.
Neighborhood schools. It's always been an issue. It's always been something that folks have wanted in New England.
Well, it's true, and I completely understand it. There's a lot of documentation that we used when we did that, but the bulk of it is it's not small schools per se. There's as much as value as small classes.
Yeah.
Okay, and also, the other thing is that schools should be on a scale where students are known. They're not in such big schools where, kids can fall through the cracks because nobody knows them. I remember a lecture I went to once, and they basically, the person giving the lecture, they were talking to teachers, and they said, okay, they had the names of all the students up there. And they said, put a red dot against all the kids you think that are really in trouble, that need extra help. And then put a blue dot next to all the kids that you think are doing okay. And the teachers all went around and did it. And then they got up and they said, well, okay, so here's the real problem. The kids that don't have any dot next to them, those are the kids that are going to be a problem.
Yeah. That's interesting.
So that's, there is that element that every kid needs to be known and appreciated and have somebody that they can talk to. And that's the really important thing. The other side of the coin, was another legitimate complaint that people house is the affordability, the cost to the community.
Yep.
And so the flip side of the small schools is that, yeah, you can build a bigger school. You can build, a 24-class school cheaper than you can build two 12s.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's just true. I mean, it's, the numbers are such because you only have to build one gym and one cafeteria and one library. Classrooms are classrooms. They cost the same, but whether you build 12 or 24, but it's the other stuff that you save the money on by combining.
I guess a question that's looming for me that I hadn't thought of before, but is does the plight, if you will, of Maplewood School and Fuller, does their quote-unquote legacy, is that a ghost that you guys are going to have to deal with maybe? Is that part of...
Well, unfortunately it is.
Yeah.
It's there are a lot of things that we have this school committee, and we were charged with coming up with a plan of what we wanted. But once we do that, it's really up to the city to carry it out.
Yeah.
You know, we have no capacity to say we're going to do this and make it happen. All we have the capacity to do is say this is what we would like to see happen.
Any type of land acquisition, any type of financing, any type of bond or bands to acquire or whatever, all that's run through the city.
Yeah, exactly. But it works the other way, too. When we say we don't need this building anymore,
right?
And we give it back to the city, and then it's up to them what happens to it. You know, when we decide, because everything's owned by the city, the school's are all owned by the city, obviously, but they're under the
they're under the auspice of the schools until you take a vote to say otherwise.
Until we say it no longer serves any, and then it reverts back to the city. So, you know, when we gave back when Pathways moved out of Maplewood School and it was available, we spent a little bit of time saying, what could we do with this? But then what happens is, you know, we couldn't think of any educational use that we had for it at the time.
Yeah.
Had we known, it might have been considered for, you know, the preschool and the administrative offices. But, you know, at that in 2002, that wasn't,
no,
you know, on the table. And So there's the city's inability to kind of come up with solutions of what to do with these properties puts fear in the mind of these people that live next to the schools that are not, that, you know, they see as being, you know, antiquated and not used as schools anymore. They say, well, am I going to be living next door to an empty building that's all boarded up for the rest of my life, sort of thing. So I understand that, but it's not anything we have any real control over.
Yeah.
But it is a fear. People voiced that at the meeting. The other thing they voiced, of course, was the loss of green space in East Gloucester. And I think, you know, although that's always a legitimate argument, I don't think it's... I think we need to actually look at how much green space there is, because that piece of land is bordered on both sides by greenbelt property. The Pines is the old Robinson's property, you know, that runs down. And then it's all wetlands right through the middle of it, so it's not anything, in ledge and wetland, that anybody's really going to be able to do anything with it. So we're not talking about using the 43 acres. We're talking about using about 10.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. It's certainly been informative, and I hope that the listeners got a good flavor for just how many challenges you folks face as policymakers running the schools, and it's not a simple equation anymore, and I want to wish you luck as you go forward with this project and the other projects and trying to provide the best facilities for Gloucester's current and future students.
Well, thank you, Josh. It's been my pleasure to be on, I just want to leave people with the idea that this is a long process, and we're really just starting.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing time with us, and certainly for all that you do for the school, for the city, in your volunteer and elected capacities.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, there you go, John Pope. Mr. Pope and I go way back.
Well, yeah, well, we grew up in East Gloucester, so, you know, all these Gloucester people are related, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, John was one of the first people who introduced himself and became friends with me when I moved to Massachusetts as a senior.
Oh,
in those days. And we became good friends and a pillar of the community, as they say. Great family. And
his mother just turned 100 this past spring.
Wonderful.
And she was close friends with my late father. So Marble Street.
There you go.
People. Yeah.
Well, there you go. I want to remind our listeners and people checking in that today, Friday, we have two football games coming up tonight. We'll have Swampscott Lynn English, I believe it is, on Channel A. And on Channel B, it will be Marblehead at Wakefield, both games at 7 o'clock tonight. Our video, our live streaming video game, will be Marblehead at Wakefield, and you can catch that on your device. You can also catch it at the Sylvan Street Grill on the big screen in Peabody and at the Gloucester House on the big screen in Gloucester. So there you go. Check the website for more stuff. We've got stuff coming in even as I speak that we're posting here. And, of course, this is on demand. Tell everybody about it. MSONewsports@gmail.com is how to get a hold of us.
JoshArnold@Verizon.net
is how to get a hold of Josh. Thank you very much. Have a great day. This is MSONewsports.com.